The Ways and Means will come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair McLean.
Here.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Here.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Here.
Ranking Member Escamani.
Here.
Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Burfield.
Here.
Campbell.
I'm back again.
Caruso.
Here.
Casello, excused. Daly.
Here.
Duggan.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fernandez-Barkin.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Rayner Goolsbee.
Present.
Roach, excused. Robinson.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Saroy, excused. Smith.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
The quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. Members, I want to remind you and those of you in the audience to please silence all your electronic devices. Members, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. On today's agenda, we have six bills, and I do want to go ahead and tell you that I'm gonna do a CS for House Bill 627. I'd like to do it last. I feel like that way, I think that may be the one that will have the most conversation about it, and that way I can manage the time. So on the other bills, please govern yourselves accordingly so we have enough time. And with that being said, we will move into our first bill presentation, which will be House Bill 717, Property Tax Exemptions by Representative Amnesty. Representative Amnesty, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee Members for the opportunity to present before you all this afternoon. The purpose of House Bill 717 is to ensure the local governments provide our veterans their property tax exemptions according to Florida statute. Currently, the law states that a 100% disabled veteran may be granted property tax exemption. This causes confusion, specifically in Osceola County. We have several cases of veterans being denied their property tax exemption status because of property appraisers' interpretation of the law. The statute has a permissive may, leaving it up to local perception of the law. The sole purpose of this bill is to simply change the word from may to shall. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Amnesty. Are there amendments to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are there questions on the bill? I apologize. Are the questions on the bill? There is an amendment to the bill. Representative Amnesty, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment is a strike-all amendment to simply ensure clarity in the statute. This amendment allows the language to be more precise and to accomplish the policy goals of the bill. That is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Can you explain exactly the actual change in the amendment?
You're recognized?
Yes. The actual change to the amendment is to clarify, instead of just interpreting one word, changing it from may to shall, it just gives a more concise change in the policy. That is the amendment.
Any other questions? Thank you. Are there amendments to the amendment? Yes. We'll now take up the amendment to the amendment by Representative Bankson. Representative Bankson, you're recognized to explain your amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a technical amendment. It's a very simple one. It's basically relating to the relating to clause in the bill. And if this is not changed, a simple word, then this causes this to be delayed further. And this is a great bill, and we don't need to delay. The amendment to the amendment simply reverts the relating to clause back to the same relating to clause contained in the original bill. That's the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you for that explanation of the amendment to the amendment. Members, are there questions on the amendment to the amendment? Is there public testimony on the amendment to the amendment? Is there debate on the amendment to the amendment? Representative Valdez, you're recognized for debate.
I think the way I understand this is that these amendments were not really needed because we're going back to the amended of the original bill, which brings it back to the original bill. Is what I follow correctly, right?
If that's how you want to understand it, you're welcome to do that.
I'm gonna keep
following the script, and we'll just keep on moving. So,
no, I just want to make sure that I'm following the amendments accordingly. The intent of the fix that we're trying to make it to shall is what we'll wind up doing. That's all I want to make sure.
Representative Bankson, you recognize.
No, this really refers to only line 85, which includes the word homestead, which then would create the unnecessary delay. So it's going back to the original line of 85, as it said. So the amendment to the amendment simply removes the word homestead so it doesn't confuse and TP a wonderful bill.
Representative Valdez, you good?
Yeah, I just don't see that. I'm not following it. Maybe. Oh. Yes, staff, thank you.
Is there any other debate, members? Any other debate? All right, well, give me a second.
Staff got me straight. We're good.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Give me just a minute. Representative Bankston, you're recognized to close on the amendment to the amendment.
And I will waive close. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any objections to the amendment to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment to the amendment adopted. Are there additional amendments to the amendment? There are not. We are back on the amendment as amended. Is there public testimony on the amendment as amended? Public testimony. Is there debate on the amendment as amended? Representative Valdez, you're recognized in debate.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Chair. Are we on the bill as amended?
We are on the amendment as amended.
I'm good.
Okay. Representative Amnesty, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive to close on the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, we're back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill as amended? There is. Major General James Hammer Hartzell, you're recognized. Thank you, General Hartzell. That was all the testimony that we had that signed up before. Members, is there debate on the bill? Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Amnesty, thank you very much for bringing forward this bill. As a previous school board member that served on the Value Adjustment Board in Hillsborough County, we used to see a lot of these cases like this come up before, and my heart always went out to the veterans because, you know, they sacrificed so much, and some of them were, as you mentioned here, disabled and things of that nature, and it was extremely important that they obtained the relief that they needed in order to remain in their home. So thank you very much, and I'm up on your bill.
Debate, members? All right. Representative Amnesty, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I truly hope to count with your support on defending the rights of our veterans who qualify for property tax exemption by ensuring a clear, precise Florida statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Amnesty, having closed on her bill, Rosa, would you please call the roll?
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca?
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamine?
Yes.
Representatives Bankston?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello? Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Raina Goolsbee?
Yes.
Roach? Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy? Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
21 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we will show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Now we'll move on to House Bill 791, Taxes on Purchases Made Through Private Label Credit Card Programs by Representative Brackett. Representative Brackett, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member, Vice Chair, and the rest of the members of this committee. House Bill 791 raises the 64.4 limit to 100% on the amount of sales tax that can be recovered on the unpaid balance of a worthless or uncollectible private label credit card account. Mr. Chairman, that is my bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the bill? Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Representative Brackett. It's great to see you in our committee. We do have a few questions about this, so we can walk me through this. So my understanding is that the original cap that currently exists was established in 2014. Why did the legislature come to that current number of the cap when it comes to being able to receive that sales tax?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. In 2014, the House and Senate set a final budget amount, and the Senate side, it was only $10 million left in the budget at that point in time. And so they arrived by Senator Lee at that time, concluded that it was 64.4% of what would cover it, and that's the amount they settled on.
Follow-up, Chair, if I may?
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. So stores also include a combination of taxable and non-taxable items. So how are we able to tell, you know, what had a tax and what didn't have a tax for that total amount of money the company might be trying to get back?
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Well, the majority of, of the private label credit card holders are all taxable items, unless there's a tax exemption for school products and so forth in certain days. Publix, to my knowledge, and other grocery stores don't have a private label credit card. This is mainly a Home Depot, Lowe's, Bell's, you name it, Sears, JCPenney, whoever the private label is. So that's the only exception they would have in most cases would be for, like I said, back to school days and things like that.
Chair, another question, if I may.
You're recognized.
Okay. So how does a store calculate? Because when you have a credit card, you are paying it over time usually, right? Before you might default on it. And so as you're paying it over time to the company, how do we know what went back to pay for sales tax? I don't know if that question makes sense. But if I have a balance on my credit card, I'm paying it back to, you know, Target or whatever that company is, part of that's going to the company to offset what they already paid to sales tax. So how do you know what was already paid to sales tax versus not?
Recognized.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. When those stores, take Home Depot, for example, collect sales tax, they pay it right away. Okay. So whatever balance remains on that card 5 years later, if it's a $1,000 balance, then there's $70 of sales tax out there at 7% that they did not ever collect the money on. So that's how that's determined that way. But they pay it right away within I think about a 30-day period. There's a monthly thing that we pay sales tax on.
Okay. Quick follow-up, if I can dive deeper into that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, if I have a Target card and, you know, let's just say I buy, I don't know, we'll use easy numbers, like $100 is what I purchased. And so it was $100 is what I have in sales tax. So, you know, $66 is what Target would get back in a refund potentially if that was what I defaulted on. But I guess when I pay that balance over time, hypothetically, when Target's taking my money, part of that might have went to sales tax already. So how do you quantify, like, what I paid in sales tax when I paid off month by month compared to what the company, you know, ultimately defaults me on? I don't know if that makes sense. But when you pay a credit card over time, you are paying some of that sales tax already. So how do you know what sales tax I paid compared to what was not paid?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The balance on the credit card is what's unpaid. There's no tax paid on that balance of the credit card. They've already paid the tax on the full amount, so you have $1,000 left on there. They can ask for a $70 refund because they've paid all the taxes up front. So if you have a balance on your credit card, that's the part that you haven't paid yet, the 7% of that balance.
Quick follow-up, Chair.
You're recognized. Representative Tant has a question.
Oh, perfect. Why don't you come back to me then?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's okay. Great.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking through this bill, and what I'm trying to figure out, okay, so then when someone uses their private label credit card, a consumer, and they pay that credit card bill, it includes the tax. So, but the refund would not come back to the consumer. It would go to the card company. Is that how, am I understanding that correct?
You're recognized.
You're correct. It would go back to the company because the company has prepaid all that tax on behalf of the consumer at the time of purchase. So if the consumer doesn't pay the balance off, then that's where the refund would come through, on the remaining balance of that credit card.
Yes or no? Yes or no?
I have a follow-up. I'm
you're recognized.
So I'm thinking, you know, about the credit cards, and I realize that, you know, American Express is not a revolving debt card. But when you pay that off at the time, the consumer pays that, right? The banks front the money for the payment of that card to wherever. So those refunds that come back will not come to that consumer either?
You recognized them, sorry.
The refunds that come back would go to this store. American Express, Visa, MasterCard are not a part of this program. They are not a private label credit card. They are a financing company, basically. This goes back when you purchase an item, you purchase a handbag at a local store. Store pays a sales tax right then. If you don't pay the balance of your credit card off at some point in time, they get it refunded back now, just like they do now, because they've already prepaid the sales tax.
You're welcome. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just kind of came up to me when you said that I buy a bag, the company pays the sales tax up front, but at the end, I only owe you $70. But you've already paid the tax, and my balance that I defaulted on is far less. So are you telling me, irregardless to what that balance is, they're going to get their full tax back?
They're getting the tax.
You're recognized.
Chair, they're getting the tax back on that $70 you defaulted on. That's it.
Okay.
Representative, ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. My question with that, though, is not everything that I defaulted on is something I bought, right? A credit card has fees, interest, and so $70 is not necessarily everything that I purchased from the store. Am I correct in that assessment?
You're recognized.
It could be interest on there, yes.
And so can I do a quick follow-up with that?
You may.
Thank you so much. So stores take a risk in doing this business model, right? Like these big box stores that have a credit card, they do that because selling items on credit typically makes more money for the company overall because people tend to buy more when they have that credit card, even if they can't afford it. So it's a business model that companies do because they tend to make more money off it, but they take a risk in someone defaulting. So I guess I'm curious, why are we, if they're making this risk because they make more money at the end of the day, why are we protecting them from making this risk? You know, why is this good policy? I guess is my question.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, they do take a risk when they do that, and we're not protecting their risk. We're giving them the sales tax portion back. Again, in my example, if it's a $1,000 balance on there, they get $70 back. They still lost $930 that they had to eat. They took the risk and they lost on some people.
One last question, Chair, if I may.
You're recognized.
I appreciate it. Okay, thank you for that response. And just so I'm clear, too, I know you listed some of the companies that have this, but I'm curious, when it comes to retailers specifically, I'm assuming these are just big box retailers, right? Is there a small business out there that has one of these, or is it mostly just the bigger actors?
You're recognized.
I don't know of any small local companies that have their own credit card, private label credit card, from that standpoint, so not that I'm aware of.
Questions, members? There are no amendments to the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? Grace Lovett, Florida Retail Federation, thank you. That's everyone that signed up ahead of time. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate the conversation, Rep. Brackett. I mean, you definitely know your stuff, so it's so fun to talk to you about it. I still have some questions I want to figure out because, I asked about how do we know what's taxable and not taxable? And when we're doing, for example, a permanent diaper tax break, which is the goal of this committee and the goal of the state, a good one at that, there are just items that you buy at Target, for example, that don't have tax. And so I'm concerned that we might be paying back a business on items that they never paid sales tax on. And then I'm also just concerned about that ending balance, potentially being enlarged, not by products that were purchased, but by fees and other costs associated with having a credit card. I need some more clarity on that, and maybe I can get to a yes, but I think for now I'm going to have to be a no, because I already think the current structure at that, 64-some% is pretty good in mitigating their risk, and I just don't know, why bring it to 100. I'm open to evolving on that. It's just where I am right now. So thank you, Chair.
Debate, members, any debate? Seeing none. Representative Brackett, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close, Chair.
Rosa, please call the roll on House Bill 791 and announce the vote.
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca?
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamane?
No.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Pacello? Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Rainer Goolsbee?
No.
Roach? Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy? Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
Yeah.
Valdez?
Yes.
19 yeas, 2 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now we'll move on to House Bill 1001, Exemptions for Totally and Permanently Disabled Veterans by Representative Franklin. Representative Franklin, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, to the Vice Chair and Ranking Member. HB 1001 removes the requirement that a permanently disabled veteran must own instead a property in Florida when acquiring a new property to be eligible to receive a prorated refund once the transfer of that deed goes to their name. So essentially what that means is right now you have to be a permanently disabled veteran here in Florida with a homestead property purchasing a new property. If you purchase that property, let's say in June, there are taxes from June to December that in order to receive that prorated refund, you must have already owned and had homesteaded as a permanently disabled veteran here in Florida during that year of purchase. What this bill does expands it beyond that, where let's say that permanently disabled veteran is living with family. They say they could be renting here in Florida, maybe coming from Texas, Ohio, New York, or Mississippi. They, too, would also be eligible for that prorated refund. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? All right. Seeing none, there is an amendment to the bill. We'll now take up the amendment. Amendment 1 by Representative Franklin. Representative, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. What the amendment does is align the language in this bill with existing law. It also brings clarity and specific to this bill in which how this process will be conducted. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Are there amendments to the amendment? There are none. Is there public testimony on the amendment? Is there a debate on the amendment? Representative Franklin, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank yourself and the staff and the committee, as well as my staff and constituents that helped work on this issue together. And also want to thank the members for your time today. And with that, I waive the close.
Members, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, we're back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill as amended? There is. Lauren Levy. Thank you. Major General Hartzell. Thank you. Akeen Akinyemi. Thank you. Albert Bellido. Thank you. That was everyone that I had signed up to speak. Is there anyone in public that would like to testimony? Seeing none. Members, we're in debate. Representative Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Franklin, thank you so much for coming. Talk to me. I didn't really have awareness about this bill until you came and spoke with me. I'm happy to support it. You look also very sharp today presenting your very first bill. So I wanted to say congratulations. Don't do that. Don't you do that. Don't do that.
All right. Let's keep moving.
But you look very sharp today, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness around this bill and you filing this bill. So I look forward to supporting it.
Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to congratulate you for this being your first bill, enormously consequential in terms of the community that it's going to help out. So thank you.
Representative Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to also congratulate you on this being your first bill and you being a freshman. I was pulling up in here and I was trying to figure out why all this camera action behind me is going on. And then I noticed, I see your family out there in the audience, and I was like, oh, for your bill. Okay, so congratulations once again, and I'm looking forward to voting up on this very good bill.
Whip Lamarck, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you did a great job presenting this bill, and I think you just had the right prescription for what we're doing here, and I appreciate it.
We're in debate, members. All right. Representative Franklin, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I waive the close, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Franklin, having waived close. Rosa, please call the roll on HB 101 and announce the vote. 1001.
Chair McClain.
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamani.
Yes.
Representative Bankson.
Yes.
Barnaby.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Campbell.
For the camera, yes.
Caruso.
Yes.
Casello. Daly.
Yes.
Duggan.
Yes.
Fabricio.
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin.
Yes.
Hart.
Yes.
Hillebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Raina Goolsbee.
Yes.
Roach. Robinson.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy. Smith. Yes. Tant.
Yes.
Valdez.
Yes.
21 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Members, we will show House Bill 1001. We'll report that favorably. Congratulations, Representative Franklin. Representative Franklin, you never leave the podium till they tell you that it's favorable, because there have been, at times, there have been a few chairmen who have pulled the rug out from under you. So, but anyway, congratulations. I wasn't going to do it. I was just helping him for future. Now we'll move on to House Joint Resolution 469, Revised Limitation on Increases of Homestead Property Tax by Representative Fernandez-Barkin from the podium. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my good side. That's why I'm here. So this is very straightforward. Everyone knows that on homestead property, there's a 3% cap. My HJR is just reducing it from 3% to 2%.
Members, are there questions on the bill? Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. Good to see you at the podium, Rep. So, yes, I am curious. Could you walk us through the impact of local governments? I know that's been an issue of some concern.
You're recognized.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative. I believe the impact, I'm looking for it here on the summary, but I believe the fiscal impact, if I'm not mistaken, it's difficult to calculate, but based on last year's numbers, I think it's roughly about $150 million savings, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
That number is in my head for some reason. I think it's 150. It could be 170, but I'm pretty sure it's 150.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair, if I may?
You're recognized.
Okay. So I have been diving deeper into this issue, actually, as of late, because I'm just curious who benefits the most from the 3% structure and then, of course, prudentially reducing it. And there is some data out there that speaks to potential disparities between neighbors just based on how long you've lived in that location compared to your peers. But then also, because very expensive homes appreciate more quickly than middle, lower end homes, there also tends to be a greater benefit for wealthier folks than not. Have you seen any of that analysis or have any of those concerns? And maybe you can, if you have any insight for me, because that's just what I've gleaned. I'm curious if you have alternative perspective on who ultimately benefits the most in the current program and of course, a reduction.
Well, I have not. I mean, just doing numbers on the back of a napkin. I mean, if you just do basic numbers, yes, in theory, you have a point. I mean, but that also awards individuals that have been in residences longer, as opposed to moving around. I mean, obviously, because if you move around, if you sell the property, then it gets reassessed, right? So, I mean, it really depends on the factors, because a situation that you're addressing is a situation where someone lives in a very expensive home, right, and stays there for a long time,
right?
And it appreciates over time, as opposed to an individual that's moving home to home, presumably kind of flipping it, right? In that case, it's getting reassessed. They are paying what you may want to call their fair portion. So it really depends on a case-by-case basis, and you really have to take that into consideration. But I understand what you're saying, and I understand where you're coming from. It just, you know, it depends on the facts, ultimately.
Okay. And then one follow-up, too, if I can, Chair.
You're wrecking it.
Please accept my apologies. I'm actually a renter, so I've never had the chance to experience this yet. Members, one day I will. But could you walk me through portability and remind me, you know, can someone transfer this to other properties, or how does that work?
You're recognized.
Well, portability is not part of this bill. I mean, and it's a lot more complicated to the point that I honestly would much rather meet with you at your office and walk you through portability, but it's not in this specific bill. That is something that I actually tried to address in another bill, but since it was not well received in our neighboring chamber, I took it out. Portability is not addressed in this. This specifically just deals with reducing the cap from 3% to 2%, and hopefully next session I can run a bill regarding portability, though.
Members, we're in question. Any other questions? Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Barkin, Fernandez Barkin, for this great bill. I actually did pass a constitutional amendment in 2020 called Portability, and so I really appreciate this bill. Is this bill, would you call this 2%? Going from 3% to 2%, is that what we would call the Save Our Homes cap on increase in assessments?
You recommend?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Questions, members? All right. There are no amendments to the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? There is. Jess McCarty, Miami-Dade County. Thank you. Nicole Swope, Florida Association of Property Appraisers. She was a proponent of the bill. Amanda Prater, Opportunity Solutions Project, waving in support. Bob McKee, Florida Association of Counties. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair, and Ranking Member. First, I want to start by apologizing to the representative, the sponsor of the bill, because I have not been able to speak directly with him about our concerns yet. I was able to have a brief conversation with his office, but I certainly want to make myself available, so I want to apologize on that. We are concerned about the reduction from 3% to 2%. It used to be the principle in property taxation that I could walk out my front door and I could look across the street and I could say, if I have to pay the tax, at least the person across the street from me has to share the same or similar burden. And this bill just moves further away from that. Save Our Homes has had the effect of shifting property values from homestead to non-homestead properties. I think in total, homestead properties are on the tax roll at somewhere about 50% of just value. And when you include Save Our Homes and the original homestead exemption, but today the Save Our Homes takes off, I think it's about four times what the original 25,000 exemption takes off the roll. And it does it in a much less equitable fashion. When you look at the other properties, non-residential properties and non-homestead residential, they're bearing a much higher burden. As I recall, the burden on both of those are over 80%. Of their fair market value or just value. So it shifts within those groups, but also shifts within the group of homeowners. First-time home buyers, new residents from out of state, they all bear the full burden when they first buy the home, whereas long-time homeowners pay less than that burden due to the limitation. This only, by tightening it, only makes those disparities worse. At the county level, we do rely on property taxes in order to fund important local services, and our concern is that we need, when we have something like a tax, it's difficult when the citizens on the ground don't perceive it as being fair. And so that's our concerns today.
Thank you. That was all the folks that had signed up to speak. Members, we are in debate on the bill. We're in debate. Representative Bankson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative. Of course, I esteem you highly. Serving at the local level, this was a challenge for me, and I was looking for that compelling reason to make this change. To me, the statute, as it's already stated, really becomes a self-balancing work, the 3% versus the lower of the CPI. And so, again, some of the issues that we dealt with at the local level, it is a challenge there, and I think that tool is needed to be able to meet those challenges, as they're different in different areas, different cities and counties. So for me, I couldn't quite get to that place of seeing that change. It seems minimal, but it's truly makes it difficult at the local level. So for me, I need to be able to get to that bar, and I'm not quite there. Thank you.
Members in debate. Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. I just want to echo some of the points made by Representative Banks, and I know Save Our Homes is incredibly popular, and understandably why. You know, folks get a discount. I mean, that's fantastic, but at the same time, at what cost? And we already have, you know, the 3% is already a really good model. But my understanding is that it is worsening disparities. And, you know, I am concerned that if we are trying to get relief to people in need, this is not very targeted, because the people who do benefit the most are the wealthiest, who don't necessarily need that break compared to renters, compared to folks that will rely on the government services, maybe more than others, that we're potentially making much more difficult for folks to access. Of course, this is an HJR, so we're just giving the voters an opportunity, which I have always been very supportive of. So I don't know how I feel exactly, but I just want to express those concerns around, like, what is the most efficient way to deliver relief to people. And I do worry, especially when I look at the staff analysis, members, it speaks to how, what the fiscal is. And so this will get bigger and bigger over time. And I just want to acknowledge that, too, because you are correct, Representative Franz-Barkin, it's $150 million in that 1 year. But going forward, this impact will be persistent. And multiple years of CPI exceeding 2% would result in stacking impact. So it does get, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger every year. So I just want us to keep that in consideration as well. So thank you.
Representative Tant, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I love working with you, and I just haven't had a chance to chat with you, so that's another thing. I've got some qualms, because I do represent two small counties that are already, they have a lot of ag land, so there's a whole lot of tax-exempt land, and they already struggle. They're one of the fiscally restrained counties. So I'm going to be a no today, but I want to continue to work with you on this to understand it better and make sure that they're not more adversely impacted than I'm concerned they are. So I just wanted to share that with you, because I haven't had a chance to chat with you beforehand. But thank you for what you're doing for Floridians.
Representative Crusoe, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like the bill. I love the bill. You know, Save Our Homes was set up so that people don't get taxed out of their home. And that was the whole purpose of it. People that lived there 30, 40 years were finding that they just couldn't afford their property taxes. They had to sell from their home that they raised their children, and they only wanted to raise their grandchildren in. And so by putting the 3% cap on, it did that, and it's served its purpose well. 2% will even do it better. We all know that many of the counties and cities throughout the state experience windfall increases in property taxes that they collected over the last 3 or 4 years, as property values have been screaming through the roof. On the commercial properties and the non-homesteaded properties. And all they did is, instead of reducing their millage, they just increased their budgets. And so I love the bill. I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm up on it. Hope everybody is.
Members in debate. Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Fernandez-Barkin, for this great bill. This is revolutionary in a lot of ways. I think one of the problems that we are experiencing, particularly like my county, Palm Beach County, is it's very difficult for people to retire and stay in Palm Beach County because of property taxes. Good points made by Chair Caruso that the non-homesteaded properties and commercial properties are paying increased property taxes. I think we have to be looking as a state legislature to what we can do to shift the burden. I think Florida probably is one of the higher property tax states, being in part because we don't pay a state income tax, but I still think we need to look at it as a legislature, what we can do to make long-term living in Florida. I just hate the thought of having to move to Alabama, North Carolina in order to be able to afford to live after you retire and move away from your family. So thanks again for this great bill. We, as a legislature, I think we do need to look at this problem. It is driving a lot of people out of the state. Thank you.
Debate. Vice Chair Buchanan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, thank you for bringing forward this great HJR. In my community, we have a lot of folks that are on fixed income. So on behalf of those folks, thank you very much for bringing this forward. Great bill. I'll be up.
Debate. All right. Representative Barkeen Fernandez, you're recognized. Sorry, Fernandez Barkeen, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I brought this forward because I know that there's a lot of individuals in my district that live on a fixed income, a lot of retirement, a lot of people in retirement, a lot of apartments. I mean, you name it. I mean, my district is solid, older individuals, and this exactly goes to the heart of the issue that I heard that was expressed by them during the pandemic when property prices were increasing. I mean, and a fair conservative estimate, just shooting from the hip in regards to the increase in property prices in South Florida, we're talking about a 50% increase in property prices over the last 3 years. And that's something that I'm sure many of you also saw in your all's district. So, I mean, this is something that I think would help our residents. That's why I'm doing it. And lastly, don't forget that this is an HJR. Ultimately, this goes before our own voters, and those voters are the ones that will decide this, and they need a 60% threshold for this to pass. So I ask for your support. Thank you.
Rosa, please call the roll on HJR 469 and announce the vote.
Chair McClain.
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamani.
No.
Representative Bankson.
No.
Bankson. Barnaby.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Campbell.
No.
Caruso.
Yes.
Costello. Daly.
No.
Duggan.
Yes.
Fabricio.
Yes.
Fernandez Barkeen.
Yes.
Hart.
No.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Randall Goolsbee.
No.
Roach. Robinson.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy. Smith.
Yes.
Tant.
No.
Valdez.
No.
Thirteen yeas, eight nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show the bill reported favorably. Now we'll move on to House Bill 471, Homestead Assessments, Representative Fernandez Barkeen. Representative Fernandez Barkeen, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is the implementing bill if the HJR is approved by our voters.
Thank you. Are there questions on the bill? Are there amendments on the bill? There are none. Is there public testimony on the bill? Jess McCarty, Miami-Dade County. Thank you. Chris Doolin, Small County Coalition. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chairman, Ranking Member, and members of the committee. And Representative Tant, you raised an issue that is very important. As an implementing bill, the previous constitutional amendments with homestead exemption have included in the implementing bill, if they pass, a provision to offset the impact in our fiscally constrained counties. A fiscally constrained county designated by the governor's office, there are 29 of them, and they are determined by the value of one mill being less than $5 million. We've got 11 counties where the value of a mill is less than $1 million. Relatively de minimis in the statewide budget, but I've worked with the chair or the rep, and I've talked to the chair, and we would suggest and have provided language at some subsequent stop that the offset provision be added, and I have full confidence that that will occur.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Jeff Branch, Florida League of Cities. Thank you. That is everyone that was signed up to speak. Members, we are in debate. Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And the reason for my opposition on this bill and the previous bill is because every time we take a tax exemption, we know that there's going to be some services that will be on the sacrificing list. And sometimes our residents need a little bit more of the services that are provided through these tax dollars that we are able to collect. And for that reason, and that reason alone, is why I'm down on these bills. Thank you.
In debate, members. Representative Fernandez-Barkeen, you are recognized. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Duggan, back to debate. I apologize.
I was late on the... I apologize to you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for indulging me. I guess I just want to observe for the record that Rep. Franklin's good bill passed unanimously. Everybody was okay with giving them a tax break. We are now in the position of picking winners and losers if we're saying, well, they get one, but these folks don't. I just think I want to put that out there for everybody to be aware of as we're having these discussions. We do have quite a large elderly population in the state. It is important that we maintain tax-based stability for them, for their fixed incomes. Or maybe we just revisit the whole issue and nobody gets a tax break. Food for thought.
Thank you. Debate? Okay. Representative Fernandez-Barkeen, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I ask for your support on this. This will assist many individuals in the long run and help people be able to stay in their residences. Thank you.
Representative Fernandez-Barkeen, having closed on his bill, Rosa, please call the roll on House Bill 471 and announce the vote.
Chair McClain.
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamani?
No.
Representative Bankson?
No.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
No.
Caruso?
Yes.
Pacillo? Daly?
No.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkeen?
Yes.
Hart?
No.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Randall Goolsbee?
No.
Roach? Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy? Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Valdez?
No.
Thirteen yeas, eight nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show House Bill 471 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, now we'll move on to House Bill 627, Housing, by Representative Busada Cabrera. Representative Busada Cabrera, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here today to present HB 627, the Live Local Act. Our Live Local plan is a transformational market-driven combination of policies that provides attainable housing options for Floridians at every income level and stage of life. The foundation of this legislation is our great respect for the dignity of work and the value of family life. As our state continues to grow, we need to make sure Floridians can live close to good jobs, schools, hospitals, and other critical centers for our communities that fit comfortably in their household budgets. We define affordable in statute to mean no more than 30% of your household income. We know that lower commute times mean a higher quality of life for growing families who want to live in the communities they serve and to raise their own families close to neighborhoods where they grew up. First, we are going to revise our state housing strategy. This forward-looking and optimistic set of ideas and strategies has not been amended in 30 years. It's time for an update. Live Local invests over $700 million in funding for workforce housing. We continue the historically high funding for both the State Apartment Incentive Loan Sale and State House Initiatives Partnership, SHIP, maintaining statutory language that prohibits sweeping these funds to general revenue. The bill appropriates $252 million to ship and $259 million to sale. The funding for sale includes $150 million in new recurring funds. A portion of documentary stamp funding is always transferred to general revenue. Instead of transferring to general revenue, HB 627 provides $1.5 billion over 10 years for new rental units by transferring up to $150 million a year in doc stamp tax revenue to the sale program. Again, this is in addition to the current statutory distribution of documentary stamp funding to affordable housing programs. In order to maintain the vitality of projects in the development pipeline that may be experiencing unexpected hardships in starting construction, the bill appropriates $100 million to provide additional gap financing through a competitive application process. Material and construction costs increases, inflation, and other economic factors have jeopardized the viability of projects initiated over the past several years. This funding will help bridge the financing gap and ensure these necessary affordable units are completed. Any funds not needed for this assistance will be used for the sale program. The bill appropriates $100 million to the current Hometown Heroes program. All work is important, so we are expanding the eligibility to cover all of our Hometown Heroes. We also create a new partnership with businesses to help fund workforce housing. A new corporate tax donation program gives businesses the opportunity to contribute directly to Florida Housing to benefit the sale program instead of paying portions of their corporate and insurance premium taxes up to a total of $100 million per year. To stimulate development of underutilized commercial areas and meet growing demand for affordable local rentals, the bill reduces certain regulations for multifamily or mixed-use residential projects that reserve at least 40% of the residential units for households earning up to 120% AMI. To encourage newer, recently constructed and substantially rehabilitated developments to offer attainable units, the bill creates a missing middle tax exemption for developments that set aside at least 70 units for affordable housing. This is a totally new, innovative strategy because we allow existing developments who meet certain criteria to qualify. The missing middle tax exemption targets moderate and low-income brackets. In addition to meeting affordable housing requirements, rent for the set-aside units must be at least 10% below market rate. Our bill allows counties and municipalities the flexibility to offer through ordinance a property tax exemption to property owners who dedicate units for affordable housing at extremely low income and very low income or both. The Live Local Act incorporates many voices, visions, and ideas from across the private sector, nonprofit sector, community members, and local government stakeholders. I would like to thank each member of this committee for their time, dialogue, and feedback on this legislation. I look forward to continued conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, for that explanation. Members, are there questions on the bill? Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for having that conversation with me as it relates to the bill. I wanted to make sure of a couple things that we got it on just on record, and I thank you for your conversations. Who can apply for that gap financing that you were just talking about? Is that not-for-profits or any developer? Who can apply for that gap financing?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Just to clarify, are you talking about the gap of that missing middle that has often been forgotten?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So it would be so what we're trying to do is allow for as many units to become available as quickly as possible. Obviously, it takes time for new construction to get finished. And so what we want to do is target that missing middle and allow current affordable housing, workforce housing developments that already exist to take advantage of that new program. So as long as they meet that criteria and they already exist, they can apply for that.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then we're not just talking about the Florida Housing Finance Corporation, the big guys who go in and get mega dollars from the corporation, from Florida Housing Finance. We're talking about local developers as well when we talk about this gap financing being available.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Well, the Florida Housing Corporation would oversee the distributions of funds. So the money gets allocated to them, and they oversee the allocation.
I get that part.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But what I'm speaking of is people who actually apply for tax credits they won't just be the people who will be able to get that gap. That's all I'm just trying to clarify.
You're recognized.
Well, that would be, those are two different programs. So the tax incentives is something separate from the missing middle.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
People who get tax incentives sometimes have a missing piece as well that they may not, because prices keep going up and they're changing. So I'm just trying to make sure, though, that the smaller not-for-profits and organizations can still go in to the Florida Housing Finance and apply. That's all I'm asking.
You're recognized?
Yes, so as long as you meet those affordable and workforce housing requirements and you're in that 80% to 120% AMI for what you're offering for those units, they would qualify.
Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for presenting this bill today. On lines 274 through 277 of the bill, you talk about that municipalities, counties, or any entities may not adopt or maintain an ordinance that will impose rent controls. So how does preempting municipalities help renters that are facing challenges with these rental hikes increase that are just astronomical?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so this bill does preempt locals from imposing rent control ordinances. Rent control doesn't help fix the crisis that we have right now. Right now, we have a housing shortage. We don't have enough apartments, enough homes available for those that need them, especially available to live where they work, to live close to their kids' schools, to live near the businesses that employ them. So the rent control provision, that would not help fix our crisis. This is a market-driven approach that will allow and bring more units into the market.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. And so under your bill, what happens to those counties that have adopted this measure to allow to reduce homelessness from Floridians that could be on fixed income? And we've had that conversation here today about folks that are on fixed income and running the risk of our renters moving away to Alabama, Arkansas, or somewhere else because of the rent.
You're recognized.
So what this bill does is it's a market-driven approach that will bring more units into the market, which will help drive down costs. Right now, we have the housing crisis because we have a shortage on availability to those who need to live in their communities.
You're recognized.
Thank you for just repeating the same thing over and over again, but it didn't really quite answer my question, but we'll move on. So today, we fixed a bill because of the interpretation of the law that pertains to may or shall. I see throughout your bill, a lot of it is may not. Do you see any challenges with that moving forward a few years from now, or maybe even recently when this bill becomes into effect, that municipalities may interpret the law differently?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. I may not have the answer that you want, but I shall try. My understanding is that those in this bill would be interchangeable.
Okay. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Question. Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Good to see you, Representative Becerra Cabrera. And thanks for meeting with myself and Rep. Rayner earlier last week, too. We appreciate you. I was just curious about the Hometown Hero Housing Program. Can you remind me the list of professionals that are included? Is that changing at all from the previous year, or is it the same list of professionals?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So it is changing significantly. Now we no longer have a list of exact professions. It's anyone who lives in Florida and works for a Florida-based company, because we consider our entire workforce to be heroes.
Okay, and then a quick follow-up.
You're recognized.
Does that include full-time and part-time? Could you clarify that for me as well?
You're recognized.
Full-time.
Representative Roth, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, sir, Chair. Thank you so much, and thank you, Chair, for this great bill. It's really encouraging to me, having fought the fight, being from Palm Beach County, and we're having so much problems with with affordable housing, we have average house home costs in Palm Beach County is over $500,000. So it's very encouraging that we're moving forward with this. You did mention that there's two additional funding sources. One of them isn't it could be up, I thought you said up to $150 million going into the CEL program, and another one, a corporate tax credit. Could you go into a little more detail? Up to $150 million, why is it? Is it a flexible number or a hard number?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So we were previously at $209 million for SHIP. We have now increased it to $252 million for the Housing Trust Fund. For sale, we were previously at $53 million. We've increased it to $109 million into the Housing Trust Fund. And then we have $150 million that will be recurring into GR, which would be directed into the Housing Trust Fund.
You're recognized.
And again, thank you for your comments earlier. I appreciate the fact that this is all additional money that we're already passed legislation 2 years ago to increase. I think we increased the average amount of money going to affordable housing from an average of $60 million to about $250 million 2 years ago, and then $350 million last year. So this is a big improvement. And I can only emphasize, I can't emphasize this enough, as we move forward on this affordable housing program, that we continue to talk about it and explain it to people.
Is that debate or a question, Representative?
That was a question, sorry.
Okay. You want to ask the question?
No, sir.
I'm sorry. It seemed like that was debate. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. What I did not read in the bill, and maybe I missed it, was we are allowing people to build in some of our industrial areas in addition to other areas. I'm sorry? Oh, okay. So, all right. Then I'll let you go till then, and I will come.
I'm not sure what just happened, but there was some, anyway. I see that. I did catch it. No, it's all good. Questions, members? Questions? Okay. We do have some ranking member Escamani. You're recognized.
One quick question. I'm sorry. Line 2166, might be the first time I've ever used that line item, Chair. Just about the vacancies for the Florida Finance Housing Corporation, are there any requirements for who sits on the board? Or just what does that process look like? I guess I'm curious, you know, is there a requirement that, for example, renters or tenant attorneys, folks who are like consumer centric, do they have to be appointed, or is it kind of just up to these individuals to decide?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So the only change that we've included in this bill is that the Senate President and the Speaker of the House would each appoint an additional person, but I wouldn't be able to speak to what their existing standards are.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Members, we do have some amendments filed to the bill. We'll take up the First Amendment by Representative Bisada Cabrera. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. The First Amendment revises the preemption of local government land use requirements to do two things. It requires local governments to authorize multifamily and mixed-use housing in industrial areas if at least 40% of units are dedicated to affordable housing for 30 years. This requirement does not apply in any industrial area that is defined as a recreational and commercial working waterfront. And it requires proposed developments to be mixed-use residential if the proposed development is in a municipality or in an unincorporated area of a county that is within a certain multi-county independent special districts, if less than 20% of the area in the municipality or special district is designated for commercial or industrial use. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Members, are there questions? Representative Hart, you're recognized to ask your question out loud.
Yes, sir. I tried. She wouldn't let me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. No, my question was, I did not see any language in here that talked about what would be the requirements for building in an industrial area. So I was just wondering if that is something that you might consider specifying to ensure that if we're in a brownfield or we're in any industrial area where we need some extra work done to ensure that people don't get, you know, sick or whatever.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So a great question. This would not supersede any regulations that currently exist. So health, environmental, concurrency, setback parameters that are currently required would still be required for these developments.
Questions on the amendment? There are no amendments. Is there public testimony on the amendment? No one signed up. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative Busada Cabrera, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, so the amendment adopted. And then there are additional amendments, so we will now move on to Amendment 2 by Representative Busada Cabrera. You are recognized to explain your second amendment.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment modifies the Hometown Hero Loan Program to require that a manufactured home purchase with loan proceeds must be permanently affixed to real property in this state. The real property can be either owned or leased by the borrower. This bill does not have this requirement. This change ensures that the benefits apply to those working and residing in Florida. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? There are no amendments to the amendment. Is there public testimony on the amendment? No one signed up on the appearance cards. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, so the amendment adopted. And there are additional amendments. We'll now take up Amendment 3, which will be by Representative Hart. Representative Hart, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm on the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment seeks to bring accountability to the dollars that are received from the Florida Housing Finance Corporation. In 2015, developers were caught overstating development costs and using excess money for their own personal gain. The FBI investigated six major developers covering two companies that had worked together to commit fraud of over $36 million. In 2017, the Pinnacle Group was banned for 2 years from using Florida Housing Finance Corporation dollars as a result of fraud. Since this time, there's been no real accountability measures put into place to ensure that this doesn't happen again. Since this time, there has been documentaries produced discussing the depth of the fraud and showing why it is so important that these developers and possibly others get away with this for far too long. My amendment is just to make sure that we could possibly put some restraints in place to ensure that this does not happen again.
Thank you, Representative Hart. Members, are there questions on the amendment? There are no amendments to the amendment. Is there public testimony on the amendment? There is none. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative Hart, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I bring this amendment because I am in the affordable housing space, and I know that there are sometimes companies that commit fraud, and we didn't have an opportunity to go in depth, but I did deliver some information to your office so that you can take a look at it. But I just want to go on record with the understanding that we know we have some bad actors, and for Pinnacle to just be banned for 2 years after stealing our hard-earned state dollars, I don't think went far enough. And I really would like to see us put something in place that would ensure that these large developers don't misuse our money. And so that's the reason why I brought the amendment. So I really would love to have you all support. We just need some accountability. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hart. All in favor of adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no.
No.
By your vote, the amendment is not adopted. There are no additional amendments to the bill. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? There is. Mark Hendrickson, Florida Association of Local Housing Finance Authorities. Is a proponent of Mark Hendrickson? Thank you. He's a Carrie Hebrank, Florida Home Builders. Thank you, Carrie. Holden Hiscock. is an opponent of the bill. Billy Nair is a proponent of the bill. Samantha Padgett, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Thank you. Raina Brown, City of Marathon. Thank you. Jackson Oberlink, Florida Rising. You're recognized. Is the microphone on? I'm sorry.
Is it on now?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Jackson Oberlink, and I am here today on behalf of Florida Rising and as a renter myself to oppose House Bill 627. It is absolutely critical that we address the affordable housing crisis in the state. We appreciate the intent of this bill. However, this bill would strip away the power of everyday people to pass local solutions to the affordable housing crisis in our own communities. Working class people know what we need in our communities, and taking away our power to cap skyrocketing rent hikes only benefits price gougers, not consumers. There are decades of research that show that regulating rent does not actually decrease housing supply and quantity. Rent regulations even have the ability to increase the housing supply when accompanied by other state-level policies. By taking away our freedom to regulate rent prices, you are directly undermining the will of the voters of Orange County, who voted overwhelmingly in support of common sense consumer protections. Florida has more vacant housing units than any other state in the entire country. Our problem is not the supply of housing, it is an affordability crisis. This preemptive state mandate is a false solution. Instead, we ask that you include in this bill proven solutions that would directly benefit Florida renters, such as establishing a Department of Housing and Tenants' Rights, capping security deposits at 1 month's rent, stopping application fee abuse from landlords, banning discrimination against tenants based on their source of income, and regulating price gouging of vulnerable renters by predatory companies. In sections 3 and 5 of this bill, developments that set aside less than half of their units at supposedly affordable prices would be given an instant stamp of approval, stripping local community members of the ability to engage in the approval process and improve new developments that impact them directly. In return, Floridians get more gentrification, urban sprawl, and unaffordable housing. This bill also allows corporate developers to receive tax credits in exchange for contributions. We are concerned about the return on investment Floridians will receive on the various developer tax giveaways in this bill and want to ensure that corporations are paying the taxes they owe. How many affordable homes are we guaranteed in exchange, and what is your definition of affordable? We have lost billions to corporate giveaways that simply transfer our tax dollars to corporate profits rather than funding for truly affordable housing. Instead of giving these big developers tax breaks, why don't we just tax them properly and appropriate those funds towards true affordable housing solutions? We also hope to see the Hometown Heroes program expanded to include more working people, such as restaurant and hospitality workers, sanitation workers, construction trades, linemen, farm workers, grocery clerks, and part-time workers. Renters across the state are crying out for real solutions to the affordable housing crisis and deserve a seat at the decision-making table on policies that impact us renters directly. I see committee members here today who, earlier this morning, voted to strip away all local protections for renters. This is yet another bill that does not fix the affordable housing crisis. This state mandate banning rent control serves corporations, not working-class Floridians. And the tax giveaways in this bill do not guarantee cost savings to Floridians who need relief. For all these reasons, we oppose the bill as currently written. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we have some folks who are just signed up and either waived in opposition or our supporters. Jeff Branch, Florida League of Cities, waives in opposition. Oops. I apologize. Just checking to make sure Jeff was on his toes. Jack Corey waives in support. Carolyn Johnson, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waives in support. Keena Corey, National Waste and Recycling Association, waves in support. Etta Fernandez waves in support. Jessica Hunter, Florida Retail Federation, waves in support. Innisbel Villorio, State Innovation Exchange Action, waves in opposition. Ethan Perry, Florida Realtors Association, waves in support. Bob McKee, Florida Association of Counties, waves in support. Tanner Warwick, Associated Industries of Florida, waves in support. Jeff Sharkey, Wendover Housing Partners, waves in support. Stephanie Sutton, P5 Group, Sadowski Coalition, waves in support. That is everyone that signed up ahead of time. Members, we are in debate. Members in debate. Representative Daly, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill. I'll be honest, this is my fourth session as a member and my eighth session when you added my time as a legislative aide, and we have been grappling with the issue of affordable housing, which in recent years has gotten worse and worse. And over all of that time, respectfully to past legislatures, all I've seen us do is throw money at it. And so while I don't love every provision in this bill, it's got preemptions I don't love, some of the rent provisions I don't love, I'm going to support it because I think it's innovative, it's outside the box, and it's the first step that's actually tangible action on the issue from the state level as far as I'm concerned. So I'm pleased to support it today. Thank you.
Representative Barnaby, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Posada Cabrera, I want to commend you for this very good bill. I spent 10 years as a property manager, and, this notion of quote-unquote affordable housing is a bit of a misnomer here. I commend you for your focus on recognizing that we must have a market-driven approach. What I love about this approach is it's very comprehensive. It addresses many areas where we have people in our society today who are considered less fortunate, but it still focuses on market-driven ideas. We're not a socialist country. And, you know, when I managed government housing for 10 years, I met all kinds of people. And some were very upset with me when I had to evict them for not paying their rent. But it had to be done after, you know, giving people so much time to pay their rent when they didn't want to pay the rent for various different reasons. Thank God for the fact that we give everyone an opportunity to succeed with the American dream, becoming homeowners. And homeownership is something that, we've not talked about on a national scale much in the country for many, many years. So I commend you and I commend the leadership here in the state of Florida that recognizing that a market-driven approach to housing is very, very important. The term affordable housing, I have a problem with because it suggests that we can have price controls. It suggests that government can have social engineering. And I really believe that we've got to be careful to reject government social engineering. Everybody wants an affordable home to live in, whether you're renting or you own that home. And I believe that most renters have a desire to eventually become homeowners. With these provisions in this particular bill, it will help those that desire to own their own home to be able to eventually afford their own home. For that, I'm up on the bill, and I commend and ask all of my colleagues to vote up on this very good bill. Thank you.
Representative Hart, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just say, I know that affordable housing is real. It's not a misnomer, it's real. I am in the housing industry. I face people every single day who would love to own housing. I appreciate the fact that there's money in this bill for down payment assistance and closing costs. That's the critical piece. I don't like the fact that we're preempting local government on several levels. However, I've talked to my counties, I've talked to my cities, and they said to me, this is the best we've ever seen, even with the things that they don't like. So I cannot not support a bill that I know is going to help so many other people with their down payment and closing costs. But I truly believe there should be some form of rent stabilization. And I am a landlord, so I'm speaking for myself as well. When we take people's rents to the point that it takes three full-time jobs to be able to afford your rent, that's a problem. And there should be something that the local municipalities could have done. They're the closest to the people. We're not. And every single day we sit here and we take away the rights of our cities. So no, do I like preemptions? I absolutely do not. But I applaud the fact that Senate President Pasadena put together a bill that would make me vote for it, even though I don't like some parts of it. Those of you who know I've been here 5 years, I've fought constantly for the Sadowsking Housing Trust Fund to be raised, to stop gutting that fund, to allow those dollars to flow back to municipalities and counties. And finally, there's some real money going to go back. So I applaud you all for this, but we've got to do something about preempting local government. So I'm in.
Representative Tant, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill. You and I talked on the floor the other day a little bit about it. Some of you might not know this, but I am a part of a nonprofit that is building an affordable housing community for people with disabilities right here in Tallahassee. And I will tell you, as someone who's just gone through the whole process of applying, and it's rigorous. It is the accountability, the metrics that you have to meet in order to access and be part and participate in these things is very tight, as it should be. I mean, when you are accessing public funds, it should not be easy, and it is not. Let me just tell you, it is very difficult. I will tell you that I agree with my colleague Barnaby down there, and Rep. Barnaby, and I want to say that homeownership is the American dream. It is. It's the quintessential American dream. Further, having a secure roof over your head does lead to better health outcomes, better job performance, better educational outcomes. So in my view, this bill is very needed, and I am very excited mostly about the workforce plans, because I have young adults in my family who will be part of that first-time homebuyer workforce potential. So my local realtors support it, my local government support it, and the Sadowski folks, Bill Sadowski's wife is a close friend of mine, and I have worked closely with them over the years, and they're very supportive. So I'm up on the bill, despite some provisions I'd like to continue to work on. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you, Representative, for carrying this bill forward. And I know I share this in State Affairs, but you know, I'm in a very unique spot with this bill because the preemption in it, members, directly targets my constituents who, this past November, at 59%, voted for what is an emergency referendum on rent stabilization. And I just want to provide that quick background, because rent stabilization, rent control programs are dramatically already preempted in the state of Florida. That's already been done. In Orange County, which is being litigated in the courts right now, it was during a housing emergency. So you first have to declare housing emergency, and then the county commission, they can't just do an ordinance, has to be a referendum, and it only lasts 1 year. So that's what our voters did in Orange County, because constituents were very frustrated by rent going up 20, 30, 40%, to the point where the most common, you know, phone call or email I would get from constituents was, how is this legal? How can my rent go up this much? My amenities are not changing. My quality of life is not improving. My wages are stagnant. The voters were driven to do something about it. And like I said, the same year I was elected or reelected, voters approved it. So I definitely struggle with this being in the bill, because I don't want to betray my constituents. And I also really empathize with the need for renters and tenant protections. There is another bill moving through right now that would preempt even our Office of Tenant Services that we just opened this past March. This month, we just opened this new office to help tenants navigate different support programs, also have access to pro bono legal aid when faced with an eviction.
And those are good policies. Those are good consumer policies. And I also just want to encourage members to kind of rethink some of this notion of, like, you know, tools of control, because this package is also an incentive package. Like, you know, it is government getting involved and trying to shift the current direction of market. So, you know, I appreciate the comment of market driven, but we really are still, we're gearing things a different way. We are getting involved in the market. The only difference is that, you know, there's incentives being used versus protections. And you can push and pull on which one folks prefer. Every problem can benefit from both tools. But it's very difficult for me to, you know, overlook the fact that this is directly taking away something that my voters approved in November. So I'm still struggling with it. But I do think there's some fantastic parts of the bill. I also heard again from the Surfside mayor, who has some concerns locally himself too. I'm sure folks got that same email. He spoke to us in State Affairs about 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I'm still processing, but I do want to say thank you for the bill sponsor's leadership on it, but it's just hard for me to see my voters and their voice get erased with this since they did vote to approve it this past November. Thank you.
Representative Roth, in debate.
Yeah, yes, sir, Chair. Thank you, and thank and apologize for earlier. I want to take off on some of the words that Rep. Barnaby mentioned. One of the real problems we're having with this idea of affordable housing is really the workforce housing. And this idea that we're focusing a lot of new dollars that were in general revenue and now going straight to sale to help the rental housing market, that really, to me, is revolutionary. The idea of really being able to bring, you know, not home ownership, but rental property, continuing to focus on building more properties, that's our only solution to getting ahead of the problem. Unfortunately, we have people moving into Florida faster than maybe we want sometimes, and I think that's why it's so important that we have this legislation, that we really do focus on new dollars and new focus on rental housing. And we also need to continue to focus on where that housing is going to be and have it being close to where people work and transportation. It's a huge problem, and I think we're making a great first step with this bill. So thank you very much.
Members in debate. Representative Lusada Cabrera, you recognize to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to each member who took the time to talk about this bill with me. I know it's comprehensive, but it is so for a reason. I know some of us aren't going to agree on the rent control provision, you know, but that would be a Band-Aid, a temporary fix, because after a year, that rent could go right back up to where it started and then some. It doesn't help fix the shortage that we have in our housing crisis. And I want to address a couple things that I heard during public testimony. You know, it was asked, what is your definition of affordable? Well, our definition of affordable is what we said it was, and it's what's in this bill, it's what's in statute, that it's no more than 30% of someone's household income, and that is not happening right now. It was also mentioned that the Hometown Heroes program should be expanded to more working people. Members, it can't be more expanded than it already is now in this legislation, because it is for every hardworking Floridian. It is for every Floridian who lives here and works for a Florida-based company, because our entire workforce, they are our heroes in our communities. We are championing groundbreaking, innovative concepts that will be an example for the nation to look towards on how hardworking Floridians can live in the area that they work. The people who are the backbone of our communities, the ones who build it up, the ones who protect it, the ones who serve it, the ones who deserve to have access to housing that is affordable, that deserve to live near where they work so they can save time and money for themselves, their families, and their futures. And I ask each of you for your support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Lusada Cabrera, having closed on her bill, Rosa, would you please call the roll and announce the vote?
Chair McClain.
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Yes.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Yes.
Ranking Member Escamani.
No.
Representatives Bankson.
Yes.
Barnaby.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Costello? Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Hernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Rayner Goolsbee?
No.
Roach? Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy? Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Yeas, 2 nays.
Members, by your vote, we will show HB 627 reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Thank you. Members, thank you for your attendance today in our meeting. As always, I appreciate your questions and your debate. Our next scheduled meeting is next Thursday, March the 30th, and it will be at 8 o'clock in the morning, so get a good night's sleep and be here bright and early. I didn't get to choose the time, but anyway, but I'm happy about it. I'm happy about the time. This concludes our committee agenda for today. Representative Hart moves we rise. Without objection, show the meeting adjourned.